Let's call this meeting to order. It's 8:04, Tuesday, February 24th. With us today, Representative Harris, Representative Munoz, Representative Keller, and Representative Gardner, and myself, Bob Heron. If you have a cell phone on, please turn it off. If it goes off, you get to bring donuts next time. Okay, this morning, we're going to have another hearing on HB 74, sponsored by Representative Jewell. Good morning, sir. And on the Coastal Management Program, with him is Elizabeth Hensley. It's our intent to hear amendments offered by the sponsor. If people have signed up for to testify, we will hear those also. Then we'll discuss the bill amongst the members. Okay. At this time, Representative Jewell, if you would please address the committee, if you wish, and then after that, we'll hear testimony. Then after that, we'll consider your amendments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Good morning, Madam Co-Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Representative Reggie Jewell, House District 40. And with me today is Elizabeth Hensley, who's my aide on this bill, in addition to being an intern. She's third year law student from the district, and glad to have her with me. Just a kind of an opening, I guess, and then we'll move out of the way so that you get to your other public testimony so that we can do this. You know, this bill has generated a wee amount of interest throughout the state. And, you know, some of you may know me. I'm the least controversial guy in this building. And, but yet, I also take the job that I do fairly seriously. And we put this bill forward because since the passage of the bill that made the changes, I believe that was HB 191 in 2003. It's been 6 years. The coastal districts, the people in my district have tried to make the system work. And to this point, this has not been able to come to any conclusion. So we've offered this bill. Over the course of time, we have heard from the department, and when we introduced this bill last year, that the department was going to come forward with a bill to address some of the issues that have been brought up. And it has been stated on more than one occasion this year that they don't have any intent of bringing a bill forward. They're simply going to continue to oppose this. And we have had some discussions with not all of the people in the industry, mind you, but some of the people in the industry. If you don't care for this bill, what are your solutions? And nobody has been forthcoming with trying to find a system to work, including the department. Just simply no. And so I will continue to press forward on this issue because I feel very strongly that we need something from the department through legislation that brings people from impacted areas to the table in the permitting process in a meaningful way. And having said that, Mr. Chairman, I will move aside so that people who want to come and testify can do so. And then I will have Elizabeth come forward with and explain the amendments.
Thank you, sir. At this time, let me let everyone know who's on standing by to answer any questions if necessary is Lindsay Walter. She's in Anchorage of the Department of Law. Also standing by in the room is Randy Bates with Natural Resources. He's available to answer questions. And Terry Camry, did you want to testify or stand by?
I'd be happy to testify. I'm sorry, I don't know if you're taking this question.
All right. Okay, if you could come forward. And then also after Terry, we will ask David Case, representing Northwest Arctic Borough, to testify. But this time, we will take Terry Camry's testimony. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Terry Camry. I'm a planner with City and Borough of Juneau. I've testified in front of this committee before, so I'll keep my comments brief. I didn't prepare any formal testimony for the morning. I would just like to restate City and Borough of Juneau's support for this bill. The districts have been working to regain their position of standing within the coastal management program since that role was so drastically reduced in 2003. And you've heard loads of stories from the other districts about how their plans were reduced, how policies that were very important to their local communities were not acceptable under the current statutes and regulations governing this program. So that's the most critical thing this bill does, is allow districts to bring those policies back in the coordinated review process with the state. And again, as I've mentioned before, the districts, certainly City and Borough of Juneau, use the local coastal management programs for a variety of important purposes, to promote development in certain areas, to protect other critical areas. And coastal management is the way that local concerns get carried forward from the bottom up and respected through the process. The state did indeed go through a very substantial reevaluation effort through the fall, and I'm sorry to see that hasn't resulted in new legislation. We were all looking forward to seeing what they could come up with, and hoping that would help us to reach a solution together. But in the absence of that, I think this bill does a lot to address the concerns of certainly of districts, but also of agencies, of industry. As I mentioned the last time, we all work very closely together. It's not a matter of separate interests. The local governments have a very strong interest in promoting healthy economies, and coastal management program ideally, when run well, is a very, very good way in which to do that. So with that, I just want to restate our support of the bill and open to any questions.
Yes, before we go to questions, we join with us this morning Representative Cisna and Representative Millett. And with that, Representative Millett, your question, please.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Can you give me an example of maybe a project or development that went forward that your city and borough didn't have input on that was a detriment to your coastal zone, your management plan? Is there some specific example of where input wasn't heard, or a development that went forward that was a detriment and outside of something that you in your position would have wanted to go forward?
Well, thank you very much for the question. I don't know that I could identify a very specific project at this point. I hadn't really thought of that before I came. The issue that I've raised over and over again in these hearings is that in City and Borough of Juneau lost such a large number of very important policies through the Coastal Management Program. It was the decision of the Planning Commission, the Assembly, that we are going to keep those policies in our local land use code. And again, the example I frequently raise is basic streamside setback, 50-foot setback from salmon streams. We couldn't get that policy approved in the Coastal Management Program. So now when a project comes forward, that policy is reviewed through a separate process at the local level rather than through a coordinated review with the state. And that adds time and expense to the developer. As far as a project that we were completely cut out of, I'd have a hard time coming up with a specific example. The issue with the districts is one of due deference. What DNR often says is that districts can always comment on projects. Districts can look at the statewide standards if they don't have local policies. We'll always listen to the districts. But it puts the district in a very different position when they're commenting on state standards versus one of their own local policies. They don't have, quote-unquote, deference in interpretation of that state standard. When you have a local policy, the state and the federal governments have to listen to you, as long as, I mean, it would be an exaggeration to say that they absolutely have to listen to you. I don't want to make things too complicated. The districts always have to provide strong scientific support and backup for any position they take. But provided that you have strong written evidence to support your position on your local policy, barring anything significant to the contrary, the state and federal government have to follow the local district wishes. And so the districts are in a very different position when their local policies are all cut out and they're left to comment on the statewide standards. It's a much, much weaker position to carry forth local concerns. I hope that answers your question.
Okay. All right, any other questions for Terry? Yes, ma'am.
Could you explain the term carve-out? It was referenced in some of the backup materials, and I'm unfamiliar with that term. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I'd be glad to explain that. The carve-out refers to the Department of Environmental Conservation, and it refers simply to DEC's removal from the process. It's sort of an unusual term, but it's been described as the DEC carve-out beginning in 2003. So when they talk about removing the carve-out, they're talking about removing the carve-out and restoring DEC's role in the process.
Okay.
Any other questions for Terry? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time, we will go to David Case, Northwest Arctic Borough. Please come to the mic and state your name and affiliation, sir.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Sorry, I had you on mute. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, Madam Co-Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Case. I'm the borough attorney for the Northwest Arctic Borough. I've had that position for about something in excess of 15 years and worked with the borough under the old coastal management program, and then we have participated with the DNR in attempting to mediate the borough's participation in the new program. And let me just address two things. First, a brief history of the borough's experience under the old program. And in my experience, there were only two projects that were ever denied under the old coastal management program in the Northwest Arctic Borough. And those were with the full participation and concurrence of the state. One was a proposal to virtually dredge the entire coast of the borough for possibly finding minerals that had no merit, and the other was a use of an archaeological site that we documented, and the State Historical Preservation Office concluded that it could not be developed. But the program worked well for the borough, and in fact, we always viewed it as a means of assuring development, but assuring that the borough would have a voice in the development at its at the local level. And that's a theme you've heard repeated by many of your witnesses at the prior hearing, and then Ms. Camry and Representative Jewell here today. And so let me emphasize the other point that I want to make, and that is, and that it has not been explicitly stated here in these hearings, but I think what you're dealing with here is a question of whether development and decisions about development will be made in a bureaucratically centralized manner within the Department of Natural Resources, or will that decision-making be decentralized throughout the vast area of Alaska and take into true account the diversity that exists in the many geographic regions of Alaska, one of which is the Northwest Arctic Borough. And I mean diversity not only in geography and coastal resources, but also in the cultural and historical and resources of the people that live there. And that is one of the most frustrating parts of this process that we've been through trying to mediate the borough's participation in the new program, is that it is obvious that when the borough attempts to and has attempted to develop policies and local policies that will address its unique local resources and its unique cultural and subsistence practices, that we essentially have been stonewalled by the department. But we've never been able to, and we can never engage the department in what I think is the real issue, and that is it better for the state of Alaska to have its resource development centralized bureaucratically in the state government, or is it important to develop resources consistent with and in tune with the concerns of local people? And in a state we would suggest as vast as Alaska and with a constitution that is set up to afford local government real control, home rule authority within the geographic areas of Alaska, that these decisions should be somewhat decentralized through these local districts. And that is, I think, a public policy issue that the legislature is uniquely qualified to address. That will conclude my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Case. I have no others signed up to testify. Is there anyone that wishes to testify that has not signed up? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony. Representative Jewell and Elizabeth, you come back to the table and we'll consider your amendments at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. You have four amendments in front of you. I'm not sure. Oh, yeah, you do. They're numbered. I guess what we'll do is we'll take them as they're numbered, and if somebody from the committee would move them, since
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
Okay. Is there? Please go for an explanation.
You might want to have somebody object to this.
Oh, object. Yeah. I'll object to it for discussion purposes.
Yes.
I was going to keep her quiet if there was no objection. thank you. And with that, I'll turn this over to.
We try, Mr. Representative Jewell, we try real hard.
Okay, so thank you. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Sagula-Kensley. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. I've not done this before, so I'm assuming that we'll walk through the amendments page by page.
We'll do amendment number one first.
Okay, great. The first amendment is at page 7. It is to delete at line 20 through 23, and then to add at line 20 the following language. Do you like me to read these out loud or?
Yeah.
Okay. B2A, this would say, a coastal resource district shall ensure that the enforceable policies are necessary given local conditions and are supported by evidence including contemporary or traditional local knowledge if the policies are more specific than state or federal statutes or regulations. So this amendment will basically clarify that section there that exists, because it's written in kind of a muddy way. It's not very clear. And I read it and I thought, what? So this just kind of clarifies that. And
I had a question.
Please go ahead.
Would that then delete sections 1 and 2, or 2 only?
2 only. One would remain.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Gardner, please.
Thank you very much. Well, I can certainly assume that everybody recognizes that there is value to contemporary and traditional local knowledge of an area. How would somebody who wants to see a development there dispute contemporary or local knowledge? I mean, if it's not documented in a formal kind of way, how do you argue against everybody knows kind of standard?
I think the way to do that would be that we're saying that the enforceable policies must be based on, supported by evidence, including contemporary or traditional local knowledge. So I think through the approval process of that enforceable policy, there would be a discussion as to whether or not that local knowledge is really truly justifies the need for having that enforceable policy. So I think one way to do that, the thing that pops into mind immediately, is you have one person saying, who's a proponent of this enforceable policy, there's an eagle nest, and this is the area where eagles nest. I know that because I've seen it. I live here. I'm a local. You could have somebody else who's been in that area say, no, that's not true. There are no eagle nests there. So you'd have people who've been to that area who have investigated, who've seen it, looked at it with their eyes, and may have scientific evidence to support their position either way, to refute that, the need for that enforceable policy.
Thank you.
Some of the concerns that I've heard is specifically to this section, and I appreciate the amendment. And so the word that you've taken out is stricter. I mean, and how come that?
The word stricter, Chairman Heron, I think it is, like you said, it is something that's raised a red flag for a lot of people, thinking that that word would enable coastal districts to create right enforceable policies that go beyond state law or federal law. And that's not the intent of this bill. And so omitting the word stricter and just letting more specific stand would, I would hope, lower that red flag to at least a yellow, maybe even green.
Okay. Any other questions on this amendment? Is the objection maintained?
It is.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask one question?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please. Representative Harris.
Ma'am, thank you very much for being here. Pardon me, I'm fighting off a cold, and I'll do the best I can to try it. The whole purpose of the bill, and I think a lot of this amendment deals with the whole bill, but is the fact that, or seemingly the fact that the local people, the people closest to the resources, closest to the affected areas, feel that their position or their voice isn't being heard when it comes to development of these areas. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes, sir. I think it would.
So what you're trying to do here with this piece of legislation is you're trying to, again, develop a coastal policy board that would give local areas more input in the ultimate decision-making of the development of the coastal areas. Would that be correct?
Yes, to the chair. Yes.
So then in these amendments, you're trying to describe what the parameters would be for the coastal board. In other words, what kind of stroke they would have when it came to the overall policy. Is that correct?
Sorry, could you, through the chair, could you repeat that? This is, yeah, could you repeat that?
Okay, so section B, which subsections 1 and 2 are under states in developing enforceable policies in its coastal management plan. A coastal resource district, which I think is what you're talking about here, shall, and of course the words ensure that the enforceable policy stays in, but then you take out the subsection 2 and you add over here are necessary given local conditions, right? And then you say they're supported by evidence. You talked about the eagle's nest and that sort of thing. So again, what you're trying to do is you're trying to give what the parameters in this little part of the amendment here are for this group, right?
Through the chair, yes, I think you're absolutely right.
That's all I want to know. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Millett.
I'm just going to speak to my objection, if that's okay.
Sure.
I have a problem with this amendment, only because I see contemporary and traditional as conflicting words. I grew up in Anchorage, and what is contemporary to me isn't, a traditional knowledge. It's something that's new. It's something that has come into be. Whereas traditional knowledge is something that has been passed on. So to me, those two conflict, and I would imagine that they're rather subjective and by nature too. So I'm going to keep my objection just because I think that they are the two conflict, because I think contemporary knowledge and traditional knowledge are two completely different things. I don't think they necessarily go hand in hand, and I think that would be a confusing and subjective language to put in statute. You know, having evidence that's, you know, you're trying to make a traditional link to, and evidence that you're trying to make a contemporary link to. And it's based on subjectiveness of who's giving the traditional knowledge or the contemporary knowledge. So those are my concerns.
The sponsor, comment?
Just a comment on some of this, the way I've watched this work. You know, local knowledge, traditional knowledge is called, there's a word, term of art, it's called anecdotal information. You know, that's so whether I agree with that term or not matters not, but that's how local knowledge has been categorized. And with regard to how it fits in this section, I've watched and seen much local knowledge paralleled with scientific data. And this is an acknowledgement of the two systems working parallel. When scientific data can confirm anecdotal information.
Representative Sisna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is, and I was thinking of something that's happened to me quite a few times in my looking at health systems in communities, and I don't know if this fits this, and am I correct in my thinking it does, that, for instance, there'll be a huge amount of money spent putting in some modern facility in a community, and then the local people will tell me I wasn't listened to. This building is right in the way of kind of a it's the end of almost a glacier that gets set up because it's coming. You're coming down the hill, for instance, and there's ice all the way to the door, but nobody would listen. Does this fit that kind of thing, or is this addressing another problem?
Through the chair, I think it could, and it would depend on whether or not the coastal district had taken the time to address that issue in their enforceable policies. So it very well could, if the coastal district had thought about that issue, put it into their coastal policies, and then attempted to get or had them approved by the board, I think. And if I could say one additional thing, when thinking about science and local knowledge, I often think of one example from the Arctic Ocean back, I think it was in the 1980s, where scientists had decided that there were too few bowhead whales in the ocean for the whale hunt to continue. And the whalers who spend their lives out on the ocean, they said, no, there are plenty. We know how many there are. We know that the population is successful and thriving right now. And the scientists still said, no, we don't think so. So I guess to make a long story short, eventually the whalers worked with the scientists to show them, using sonar machines, that the population was actually really healthy at that time. So I think that's one example where sometimes local knowledge, people who spend day after day after day in a certain environment, will learn things and glean things that scientists may take a little bit longer to understand just because they're not there all the time, day after day. So I thought I'd just explain that example because it's something I think about when I think of this issue.
And go ahead, sir. Representative Jewell.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing to Representative Millett's question, there's an or here. Contemporary, it's not and, it's contemporary or, so it's so it allows for either.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Anybody here from the administration to speak on this amendment?
We have two people. We have the Department of Law, and we have Randy Bass of DNR.
Okay.
So.
Are they in their room here?
Yes, Randy is here.
Oh, Randy, okay. Can I ask him to come up here real quick?
Sure. Randy, please state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Randy Bates. I'm the director of the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management, which is within the Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy, I know that you stated the last time we had this bill before us that the department opposed the bill. Forget about that for just a second and just concentrate on this amendment. The way the bill originally, the R version that I have before me, the way the bill was presented, and the way the amendment is drafted, do you support the amendment over the way the bill was drafted? Forget about the fact you say you don't like the subject matter here. I mean, you're not supportive of the bill. For just concentrate on the amendment.
Representative Harris, through the chair. What this amendment does is expand, in our opinion, the ability for coastal districts to write enforceable policies. And it expands it beyond what the bill, the original R version of the bill, did. And although you asked me to skip that position, clearly we go back to our substantive concerns, the expansion of the Coastal Policy Board and the ability for districts to write policies that go beyond existing state law.
Okay, so I don't want you to ramble on here because I want to get down to the subject matter here. What you just told me is that you oppose the amendment. You think the amendment is stricter than the way the bill was written, even though the bill has stricter in it. Did I interpret what you said correctly?
Representative Harris, through the chair. The amendment, in our opinion, has subjective terms such as necessary, local conditions which are undefined, evidence which isn't defined. It can include any sort of evidence. These are terms that, in our opinion, are much less stringent, much less restrictive on what district policies can do. So this amendment to the department expands the ability for coastal districts to write enforceable policies further or more broadly than what was allowed in the R version of the bill. So while they took the term strict out, it's counter to what is happening within this amendment, in our opinion.
Okay, so if I read you right, then you oppose the amendment.
We oppose the amendment.
Okay,
that's correct.
All right, Mr. Chairman, can I just I want to get just past it because I don't want to have to keep talking all the time here. Randy?
Mm-hmm.
The sponsor of this bill made a statement a little bit earlier, and I think he made a statement out of a lot of frustration. I think the bill comes from a lot of frustration. There have been efforts put forward by people in the coastal areas around the state to try and get this the department and the administration to address what they consider to be a pretty serious issue. Are you prepared as a department to address that? I mean, so far, the sponsor said that it had no response from the department as far as any legislation or any attempt to move forward in a different direction than we're going right now. Are you prepared, is the department prepared to do anything about that, or is it going to just kind of sit still and accept the status quo?
Representative Harris, through the chair, thank you for the question. Last time I was here, I believe Representative Gardner also asked a similar question. What are we willing to do? The answer, as I said last time, the department did conduct that reevaluation. We are still working through what could and should be done. We are at this point not prepared nor planning to introduce legislation to address the changes that are proposed within this legislation or any other change. At this point, we do not believe that we have consensus, nor do we believe that there is a statutory revision that is necessary to accomplish change with the coastal program. That said, we do recognize that we could, if appropriate, make regulatory changes that would accomplish a great deal of resolving some of the issues that you've heard. I am not suggesting nor committing that we are going to make regulatory changes, nor what those would be, but clearly we could make changes that would address some of these issues.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before we take action on the amendment, Representative Millett.
From your opinion, evidence including contemporary and traditional local knowledge, can you define that? I mean, from a legal standpoint, I mean, what's your interpretation of what that would entail? Is it broad? Is it narrow? Is it, you know, who comes to you with traditional knowledge, who's allowed to give you traditional knowledge, who's allowed to give you contemporary knowledge? Is it only a certain elder in the village? Is it someone who's lived in the area for, you know, 50 years? Is it someone that's lived in the area for 10 years? Is it someone who's on the land every day for 30 days in a row? I mean, can you just describe to me what that means?
Representative Millett, through the chair. Contemporary is a new term that we don't have in our current coastal program, so I think that would take a little bit of effort to define exactly what the intention was. Traditional local knowledge is a term that we have within our coastal program. We do consider traditional local knowledge. We consider local usage, which is another term of art within the regulations, and these are defined under the ACMP currently. We do consider that information. Local usage, by definition, is current practice engaged in at a local level where people are using the resources or engaging in activities. Traditional knowledge is that knowledge which is handed down from generations users that would, I believe, be supported by a local body of some sort. So there are terms that we can work with. We know what they mean. There are other terms that are subjective, as I mentioned, that aren't yet defined.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take two more questions, one from Representative Sisna and Representative Gardner before we take action on this amendment. Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would be, we're in a different time. I mean, we can say that about this year in a bunch of different ways, but there does appear to be some serious changes to climate and conditions that are being experienced by communities across Alaska, and one of those is a lack of food because what has been true is changing, and the people who are experiencing it the most and seeing the most happen to be living in the places. It's different in every place that I've been. It looks different. Contemporary isn't a word you've used, but we are in a different space right now. We're in a different world than we were even a couple years ago. Is it possible for you to actually expand some of the thinking? Because our people really need some help by the people here in Juneau.
Representative Sisna, through the chair. Certainly, there's no question that if a bill like this were to pass and the word contemporary were included, we would implement it as appropriate and as according to your intention. So there's no question we can work with it. But it gets to a bigger, more fundamental question, which is the establishment of the Coastal Policy Board and, as what you heard from David Case earlier, local input, which is the way the coastal program has always been structured, versus local control, which is what this bill proposes. And fundamentally, the department opposes that concept. We believe that the coastal program, as it's currently statutorily structured, affords input and relevant input from the coastal districts, but it is a state program, and therefore the state should remain in control of the decision-making, taking into account input from the coastal districts, including information relating to contemporary and or traditional local knowledge. Those are current considerations within the program, though we don't have those actual terms included, the contemporary piece.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, then Representative Munoz. Oh, thank you. Representative Munoz.
Well, thank you. You just said that local control would be a result of this bill. In your opinion, prior to 2003, did the districts have local control or local input?
Co-Chair Munoz, through Chair. The Coastal Program in 1977, when it was originally set up, approved in 1979, established a state coastal program with a local implementation technique, which meant the coastal districts were a partner in the program, and they had enforceable policies, and they were able to apply those and determine whether a project was going to be consistent or not, compliant with the laws. They never had veto authority, but the state always offered due deference. If they have expertise or responsibility in the area they were commenting on, we afforded them deference and gave them greater weight as we considered whether the project was compliant or not. Pre-2003, the coastal districts, from my perspective or the department's perspective, it was always local input. The coastal districts always had an opportunity to participate and have input on the projects. They never had the ability to outright deny a project.
Okay, Representative Harris.
Just one last question. the world's changing. Representative Sisson and I agree on something here. We probably agree on more than we disagree. But one issue that's out there right now, we have a litigation gone to the Ninth Circuit over the Shell offshore drilling. Local people felt like they were not given due consideration for their issue, an issue I think that probably would have been addressed under these kind of conditions that we're talking about here today. The only remedy they felt they had was to, you know, piggyback with some other folks and go to court. Now, the whole operation is stopped, and no idea when or if will ever be developed. I'm wondering, in your mind, in the department's mind, if imposing, and I know this is another group that industry has to go through, and I'm sensitive to what industry's problems are, but I'm also sensitive to what the local people's problems are. And I see the Ninth Circuit, which is no friend of Alaska, you know, basically, getting issues, and not just the one we have here with Shell, but other issues around the state. We see them cropping up all the time, endangered species issues, other issues of that nature. If you don't have a local remedy done by local people, are we not just setting ourselves up for a continuous trek down to San Francisco and maybe back to Washington, D.C., to have this stuff litigated when the reality is perhaps, if we make an effort, if we could have the local folks that are really affected by it getting together saying, we can work this out. You know, we're all Alaskans here. We don't want to have our issues decided by the Sierra Club. I don't think the people on the North Slope, and I know my friend Representative Jewell doesn't have any more desire to have the Sierra Club or any of these other Friends of the Earth or anybody else deciding the fate of the people of the North Slope or Kotzebue or any other part of the state. But they want to have some input. They want to decide, have a lot more input in the decision that affect themselves. And that's what I'm saying. You know, I wish we didn't have to have this legislation here, because I wish the administration would understand that the local people have some concerns. And they're not illegitimate concerns. They're concerns about their livelihood. They're concerns about the historical way they've lived for centuries. And it just seems like the administration, in this respect, is turning a blind eye to that and saying, we don't think there's a problem. You know, and I've been around here a few years, and I've seen this kind of stuff crop up, and, you know, and I've voted on the side with the industry for a long time, but I got to tell you, a lot of times the industry had been wrong, and we've supported them. And look what's happened to the cruise ship industry. We supported the cruise ship industry for years, and the people suddenly said, no, we've had enough of this crap, and they made it a lot worse on them and if we would have addressed it ourselves. What I'm saying is we could make it a lot worse if we don't. I mean, things could get a lot worse if we don't address them today. I'm asking you guys to address them so we don't have to have legislation like this. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Is there still objection to the amendment? Okay. Chris, roll call, please.
Representative Keller.
No.
Representative Millett.
No.
Representative Sisson.
Yes.
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Co-chair Herron.
Yes.
Co-chair Munoz.
Yes.
5-2.
Okay, amendment passed. Let's move on to amendment number 2. Representative Jewell, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
briefly, please.
You have before you amendment number two.
I move amendment two.
Is there objection?
I object.
There's an objection.
Okay. Thank you. So amendment two is at page 11, line 13. This amendment would delete line 13, which reads that, starting from the top, the board shall, this part will not be deleted, but to give some context, the board shall approve a district coastal management plan submitted for review and approval if the, deleting line 13, district coastal management plans are, meets the criteria, meets the requirement of this chapter and the district plan criteria adopted by the department, and now to line 13, are not preempted by federal statutes or regulations. And we would add there at the same line 13, are not preempted by federal or state law. The next part is at same page 11, line 20, after that section to add a part C, which would read, in section A2B of this section, an enforceable policy of the district coastal management plan is preempted by state statutes or regulations if it is prohibited either by express legislative direction or direct conflict with a state statute, or where a local law or regulation substantially interferes with the effective functioning of a state statute or regulation or its underlying purpose. This section, this amendment clarifies that district enforceable policies cannot override state law or render state law moot by further articulating when a district policy oversteps its bounds, i.e., when it is preempted by state law. As we've understood, as we've heard, much of the discontent about with the ACMP involves a lack of consensus as to what enforceable policies are approvable, and this would further articulate when they are not. They're not approvable if they've been preempted by state or federal law.
Okay, I'll go ahead, Representative Miller.
So if they run afoul with regulation, can you, so you've removed the word regulation and but you, in the section C, you've added statutes or regulations, but you just talked about state statutes or federal law. So if it runs afoul with regulation, what's the remedy?
I think, through the chair, I think law could include both regulation and statute. Would you like to comment?
Any law that is passed, the departments write regulations for, and so it's covered there, I think.
Okay, I guess I have one question. I mean, looking at the amendment and reading the proposed legislation, it looks like it's some sort of guidance amendment. Could you please explain what that means to you, to the sponsor of the amendment?
Yes, I do believe this is a guide. It's guiding, the board requirements for review, board review and approval. It's guiding the board on what plans it can approve and what it can't. And the concept of preemption is included here because that's a concept that is well known throughout the land. People understand preemption. There are other concepts that you could use to try to curtail what enforceable policies are approvable, but you really want the public to understand, and all interested parties, DNR, everybody to understand what the ceiling there is for enforceable policies. So the concept of preemption is one that would ring understandable to many people, I believe.
Thank you. Further questions? Is objection maintained?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Harris.
One question here. Am I reading this wrong here? On page 11, line 16, is that subsection B, is that the same as C? Or is it different? I guess it's different, huh?
Through the chair, B refers to federal statutes and regulations.
Okay.
C is state.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, Representative Millett, is your objection maintained?
No.
Okay. There's no objection. The amendment is approved. Let's move on to amendment number three.
Amendment number three is...
One moment. I need to wait till it gets moved.
Oh.
I move amendment three.
Okay. There is objection. Elizabeth, your boss will get you trained here pretty quickly. Please go ahead.
Thank you. This amendment number three is located at page 16, lines 21 through 28. We would delete lines 21 through 28 and add the language below, which would restore the language to the existing law. And shall I read the section?
Is there questions to the amendment? Yes. Representative Millett.
No, just give me a second.
Yeah, I'll give you time. No problem. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
So inaction by a bordering city would be included unless they exclude themselves from your coastal plan, correct?
Through the chair, yes, that is correct. And that's how the law stands today.
Mm-hmm. Objection removed. Other questions to this amendment? Okay, there's no objection. Amendment number three is approved. Let's move on to amendment number four. Representative Harris?
Move amendment four.
We have an objection. Please go ahead.
Okay. Amendment four is located on page 17, lines 8 through 23, and it does the same thing as amendment three. It removes the language, lines 8 through 23, and adds the following language, which is a restoration of the law as it stands today.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. So can you talk about why you initially offered the language that's in Section 31 and now are backtracking to simply take it out?
Yes, through the chair, in suggesting amendments in creating this bill, we looked at DNR's proposed bill, which was from the end of November, I think 11/24, and where we felt that we didn't feel strongly that that bill be changed, where we could make a concession, I guess, and adopt their language, we did. DNR, however, hasn't introduced that bill and has not testified in favor of this section, and somebody did, I believe, from the Aleutians West CR, or this section has been opposed, or people have expressed concern about it, people who otherwise support the bill, and so we thought we would remove it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Keller? Objection maintained?
No.
Okay, objection withdrawn. Further questions? Amendment number four is approved. At this time, there are no other amendments. Before we go into committee discussion, it is the, we have amendments. So with that, is the intent of the co-chairs to prepare a CS and hold this bill till March 3, where it is the intent of the co-chairs to move it out at that time. So before we end this discussion or questions or concerns?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I ask the department to come back up here again?
Mr. Bates, please come to the table, please. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning again. Randy Bates with the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management, Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Harris.
Thank you. Just, Randy, I'm going to reiterate, I'm going to be contacting your boss, so I don't think you're the whipping boy here. I'm just trying to reiterate. I think there's this bill is the crux of, it gets to the crux of a number of problems, I think, that we have. I know the governor's aware of it, and we had the food issue out in such and such a place, and we had this and that. The people of the affected areas of the state need to be heard, and I'm going to vote to move this bill out when the opportunity comes. I know that the industry folks are probably mad at hell, and that's the way it goes. But the point is that we're trying to get, I think, the representative, Representative Jewell, is trying to get the attention of people to say, pay some attention to us. We have issues, and let's pay attention. This may not be the right way to go about it, I don't know. But I do know it is a way to get somebody's attention. So, Randy, I hope you'll take it back to your boss, because I'll be taking it back to your boss anyway, but that's all right. We need to get to the bottom of this kind of stuff. And Representative Jewell said he was one of the least controversial members of the legislature, and that may be true, and a lot of times it's to his own detriment. I'm probably one of the most controversial, so I'll take his place for a minute and be that way. So, talk to him, work with him. And maybe we can get this resolved in a way that's beneficial for everybody. Because I sure as hell don't want to see all of our issues ended up in the Ninth Circuit or further beyond, because we don't talk to each other here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments, concerns, questions? One final comment by myself is, after the last hearing, I did go to Representative Jewell, and I did go to a couple of parties in industry, and I appreciate the sponsor bringing back some amendments that tries to work toward the middle. I'm disappointed that the industry reported back to me that there was nothing that they could do, and I'm disappointed in that attitude. So reiterating, it is the intentions of the co-chairs to prepare the CS for movement out of this committee on March 3 on the House Bill 74. Yes, Representative Jewell.
Thank you. In closing, I appreciate your giving us the opportunity to help us move the bill forward using the amendment process. But in wrap-up, one of the reasons they're here is the department admittedly has overreached through regulation in what the original bill's intentions were. They've stated, it's a matter of record, that they have overreached their authority. Why would we want to leave authority with the department who is going to overreach their authority? And that is one of the reasons that you see this piece of legislation in front of you today and in the future, and the lack of any movement by by the department. I think about things sometimes in a pretty simple way, and one of those ways is through the Constitution, where the Constitution says that the resources of this state will be developed for all of the people of this state, and I went and I sat on the word resources just for a second, and I think in my mind we have three kinds of resources. We have our non-renewable resources, we have our renewable resources, and we have our human resources. And in my opinion, DNR is leaving out two of those, the human and the renewable. in contemplation of their policies that they are rejecting from the local communities. And I leave that thought with you.
Thank you very much. It is 9:04. We are adjourned.